Good morning. This is 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. And this is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, January 29th, 2020. The eighth day of the impeachment trial in the United States Senate is scheduled to begin in just under an hour at noon. So we have again accelerated our show schedule and are beginning an hour earlier than usual. When this trial has concluded, we will return to our regular broadcast schedule. Ahead this hour, Timothy Dennis has a big list of live music opportunities for us this weekend. Great news. Timothy thinks the weekend starts tonight. Live music from tonight onward in our second half hour. KUAF offers plenty of music through the week, every Sunday through Thursday night. Peter Van de Graaff selects great classical music for you from 8 until 5 the next morning. Each weekend, we have locally produced shows featuring folk, blues, and jazz, like Shades of Jazz, each Friday night at 10 with Robert Ginsberg. Robert, by the way, will be with us later today to talk with legendary pianist Fred Hirsch in advance of his concert Friday night at Walton Arts Center. A discussion about cybersecurity and how you can protect yourself in the digital world takes place tonight at 6 at the Fayetteville Public Library. Mark Graff, the founder and CEO at Telegraph LLC, will explain what hackers are after and how you can stop them. This program is free and open to the public. If you're unable to attend, it will be available for viewing and replay on the Fayetteville Public Library live stream page. Also today, the release of the Black Apple Crossing Imperial Blackberry Cider. Creators say it has a rich underbelly with hints of mint. Our advice, go slow. It has a 10% ABV. Release is today at 4 at Black Apple on Emma in Springdale. This is Ozarks at Large. A local family is making a big investment in Eureka Springs. They unveiled their plans for a new adventure resort destination earlier this month. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek tells us more about their plans for Pine Mountain.
The Pine Mountain Theater and Village have been a staple along Van Buren Street since 1975. Eureka Springs Mayor Butch Berry says the plaza was built by Dave and Dee Drennan.
The Drennans came from a musical background out of Branson. And so they put up a music theater and then, of course, developed the little shopping centers around through there. And it was quite busy, and of course this was during the days when we had all the bus traffic coming through also.
The tour bus traffic is gone, and there hasn't been much traffic at Pine Mountain since the theater closed in 2015. But that's about to change with a $10 million investment in the property.
It's going to be a multifaceted destination, so hospitality, retail, adventure.
That's Marshall Johnson. He and his father, Paul, own the 40-acre property. They bought it 5 years ago and have been developing a vision for it ever since.
It's got a shopping center that's been here for many years, an old Jamboree theater that had about 600-plus seats. And then there's a bunch of wooded acreage that's connected to it that we're kind of developing the trails and cabins around.
Johnson says the wooded area will include 4 miles of hiking and mountain biking trails, 15 cabins with room for more in the future, and an outdoor stage. The Johnsons also plan to restore the existing shopping center and turn the theater into an event center.
We're adding on a new, brand new concept, a restaurant concept to that, and it will share a very large kitchen to produce for the event center and those weddings and corporate events, but also support the new restaurant as well that's going to be added to that.
Johnson says the restaurant will be a higher-end steakhouse with a small butcher shop.
We are naming that after a family member, our grandfather. I used to joke about opening a place with his middle name, and he kind of laughed and he said, well, I hope one day you get to do that. So we're opening that, and it's going to be called Lyman's Prime. And then it's going to have a Lyman's butcher counter as well, because we're going to be doing all of our own dry-aged meats.
The Johnsons aren't new to Eureka Springs. The family has run businesses in town for the last 10 years.
My parents owned the Harley-Davidson dealership in Rogers, Pictorial Harley-Davidson, and we opened that in 2006. And then in 2009, we saw an opportunity with the riders in Eureka Springs, and we opened the Eureka Springs Harley-Davidson here. And 3 months later, we opened the Rockin' Pig as well. So, yeah, we've been here 10 years in Eureka.
The Rockin' Pig Saloon will be moving to Pine Mountain Village. And Johnson says they plan to open a cafe called Lil' Pig right next door. And while they want to attract the crowds that have been coming to Eureka Springs for years, like the motorcycle riders and wedding parties, Johnson says they've also noticed the new types of visitors coming to the area.
We've seen over the last few years in Northwest Arkansas the movement with the mountain bike developments and the cycling. So Eureka Springs kind of had that going on years ago as well with the mountains and Lake Leatherwood. And recently they've developed some of those trails. That's part of the investment in the destination.
Besides the trails, Johnson says mountain bikers can also expect a pump track, skills area, and a bike shop. About 50% of the property will be dedicated to ventures operated by the Johnsons, which they estimate will employ about 100 people. The other half will be open to other tenants.
We're really not going to go after, you know, like your local doctor businesses or a laundry service, those kind of things. We're wanting to really create a destination for these adventure and tourism type customers coming to town.
Johnson says he and his family hope the project will inject new excitement into the city.
So we're trying to drive in a new direction of tourism that will continue coming for years and kind of help this town economically as well, because it's kind of had a downturn. And we have been here 10 years and done very well, but it seems like it's not been that way for everybody. So we feel it's going to be a positive impact for the whole town, and we're excited to help be a part of that.
Mayor Butch Berry says the redevelopment of Pine Mountain is one of the biggest investments the city has seen since the theater and shops were built 45 years ago.
I mean, Eureka being a town of 2,200 people, when we hit these type of developments, it's great. It's going to create new opportunities, new jobs, year-round jobs, which is what we want.
Berry says Eureka Springs is changing, and the redevelopment of Pine Mountain reflects that, as the Johnsons take what was once a popular tourist attraction and rebrand it to better suit what visitors are looking for now.
From my observations, the people in Eureka Springs, it's a younger group of people who are more into activities and experiences. You know, they want to experience what the area is like. So, you know, they're going to be into the trails, the biking, the hiking, the kayaking, canoeing, that type of activities.
Marshall Johnson says phase one of the redevelopment will include the new Rockin' Pig Saloon and Lil' Pig Cafe. That should be finished by mid-July. He expects the rest of the project will be completed sometime in late fall. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Susanna Sitek.
Just a few days after the Johnsons announced their plans for Pine Mountain, new plans were also announced for the Queen Anne Mansion and Resort. The historic Eureka Springs property will be open in April as an all-inclusive wedding venue and event space. The mansion was built nearly 130 years ago and was transported from Carthage, Missouri to Eureka Springs in 1984. Federal and state agencies permit a small number of volunteers in Arkansas to rescue and rehabilitate injured and abandoned wildlife. The permitting process is rigorous. The work is time-consuming, and more volunteers are needed. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich visits with a longtime wildlife rehabilitator in Benton County, as well as the state's lead game and fish veterinarian, to bring us this story.
A flock of rescued Chinese geese squawk inside their pen this sunny, cold morning at Morningstar Wildlife Rehabilitation Center in rural Benton County. Operator Lynn Scombedo walks by the noisy birds to a flight cage holding an owl.
You're such a good boy.
Samson's a permanent resident. He has a bad wing. He can't be released. And he's been with me for 6 or 7 years now.
Scombedo, a retired public school biology and ecology teacher, is caring for 15 injured raptors presently, along with several permanent residents, like the owl. She only rehabilitates birds.
Barred owls, great horned owls, screech owls, red-shouldered hawks, red-tailed hawks, bald eagles.
Up to a half dozen eagles a year, she says, stepping into her house where it's warm to talk about her vocation.
Well, it was back in 1987 was when I originally started. I was on Morningstar Road at that time. And then since then, about 22 years ago, I think, moved out here to this place.
Her 20-acre facility includes a medically equipped ICU, large flight cages, as well as pens where she's rehabilitated mammals and reptiles.
That's what falls under state jurisdiction.
Referring to Arkansas Game and Fish Commission, which first issued rehabilitation permits starting in 2003, Scambato says she's rehabilitated most every kind of Ozark creature.
Squirrels and possums and raccoons and voles and mice. I've done a lot of skunks. Baby beavers are absolutely the cutest. And then songbirds. Spring and summer is songbirds, all the little baby birds that fall out of the nest, you know. And then raptors.
Raptors hit by cars, caught in barbed wire fences, shot for sport, or poisoned from consuming mice who've eaten toxic bait, or ducks who've dabbled lead fishing sinkers. But come spring, her facility is swamped with hundreds of injured or abandoned baby songbirds, mostly robins, who've fallen from the nest.
They're the ones that have to eat every half hour type of thing, you know.
Songbirds enjoy live mealworms, she says. And the raptors?
Yep, go online, American Rodent Company, and get 600 or 700 frozen mice and 200 or 300 frozen rats. I thaw them out first.
Scambato relies on several veterinarians, including Faithful Friends Animal Clinic in Rogers and Rose's Vet Clinic, for help. She doesn't operate a website or Facebook page. Instead, she gets referrals from other rehabilitators or state wildlife agents.
Depending on the situation, I will go to get raptors just because they're big and they can be kind of intimidating and they can hurt you.
Several times a year, Scambato will take Igor, a tame resident red-headed vulture, to local libraries, public schools, scout troop meetings, and museums to talk about her wildlife rehab work. The Northwest Arkansas Audubon Society posts a page on Morningstar to encourage contributions. Scambato receives no compensation, instead spending her own money on food, medicines, facility upkeep, and veterinary bills.
I probably average $1,000 a month.
In 2019, she rehabilitated 400 birds. Plus, she has to pay for her federal permit issued by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, which has authority over federally protected marine mammals, migratory birds, and endangered species. Remaining wildlife rehabilitation is covered by state agencies like Arkansas Game and Fish Commission. The state counts 78 permitted rehabilitators. 44 provide general rehab, with 34 specialists, for example, who only care for turtles or opossums. Dr. Jennifer Ballard is state wildlife veterinarian with Arkansas Game and Fish Commission.
The permit is free, and there are three ways that people can go about being permitted as a rehabilitator in our state. If they have been a rehabilitator in another state and they move to Arkansas, they can submit that experience and get their permit as a general class wildlife rehabilitator. Alternatively, they can take a formal training and become certified as a rehabilitator. Or they can spend a few years as an apprentice to one of our licensed general class wildlife rehabilitators in the state and then apply for their general class permit.
Wildlife rehabilitation course trainings are held around the country, she says, and all wildlife can be rehabilitated with three exceptions.
Black bears, elk, and white-tailed deer.
New rehab facilities must comply with minimum standards set by National Wildlife Rehabilitators Association and the International Wildlife Rehab Council.
The most important thing that comes out of those is there are very specific cage sizes that are recommended in those guidelines by species. So that helps ensure that an animal is kept in a proper enclosure that is large enough to, you know, provide for all of their needs. It also gives them guidance in their care and their nutrition.
Individuals applying for a permit must be 18 years or older and not convicted of a crime involving captive wildlife or cruelty to animals. This year, Dr. Ballard plans to inspect permitted sites.
We haven't done a round of inspections since I've come on, but we will. We are planning to do that in the next year.
Only dedicated Arkansans can operate a wildlife rehabilitation center, she says, and more volunteers are needed.
We do have a high demand, and we can always use more rehabilitators around the state, but we want folks who, you know, are really aware of what it takes to do rehabilitation. It can be a very emotionally tasking thing. It can be financially a very large investment, and you need space and time. And so it's a really big commitment, and we're very grateful for our rehabilitators. We always welcome more, you know, but it's not a small decision for folks to enter into wildlife rehabilitation. You know, we want people to realize what kind of commitment that requires.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
The Arkansas Game and Fish Commission operates a 24-hour hotline for wildlife rescue, 800-440-1477. Federal and state-permitted wildlife rehabilitators are also listed on the agency's website, along with new permit applications and apprenticeships.
Walton Arts Center's 10x10 Art Series presents Ballet Memphis Contemporary Times 3, February 6th at 7 p.m. Inspired by Memphis's musical and literary heritage, the performance will include three original works by contemporary choreographers. WaltonArtsCenter.org or 443-5600 for tickets. Support comes from Dog Party USA, offering supervised boarding and daycare in an off-leash environment for dogs of all sizes. Obedience training, professional grooming, and gift certificates available. DogPartyUSA.com for more.
According to the Arkansas Department of Health, no novel coronavirus cases have been documented in Arkansas. That's the virus first detected in Wuhan, China, in late December. As of this morning, 6,000 additional cases and more than 130 deaths have been documented in mainland China. The novel coronavirus, which originates in wild animals, has since spread rapidly with 90 confirmed cases in 18 countries. It has been documented in the U.S., in Washington, California, Nevada, and Illinois. All told, 5 Americans so far have tested positive. 73 cases are under investigation. Dr. Jennifer Dillahay, Medical Director for Immunizations and Outbreak Response for the Arkansas Department of Health, says there are no cases under investigation in Arkansas at this time.
I can tell you that we do not have any patients under investigation for the novel coronavirus in Arkansas at this time. And we're fortunate in that even though we've had 5 patients who have this novel coronavirus, they were infected in China and they were not infected here. So there's currently no novel coronavirus circulating in the U.S. And we hope to keep it that way. All of their close contacts are being carefully monitored, so if they develop symptoms, they can receive prompt treatment as well as isolation.
Dillahay says her agency is being briefed daily by the CDC and that the public can also view online updates. The novel coronavirus can cause mild to severe respiratory illness with fever, cough, and difficulty breathing. It spreads from person to person through primary contact, as well as coughing and sneezing.
There are coronaviruses of different types, not the novel one, that also circulate in the U.S. So people can protect themselves by following simple rules. One is that they should wash their hands often because people often pick up these viruses from the environment, from doorknobs or places where other people who have had the virus touch them, and then we pick them up on our hands and then touch our own eyes or our nose or our mouth. So that's important. And hand washing tends to work a little bit better than hand sanitizers, but we encourage the use of hand sanitizers if hand washing is not readily available.
The CDC and State Department have also issued an advisory recommending that Americans avoid travel to China. U.S. airport screenings of incoming passengers from China have also been expanded from 5 to 20 airports. No airport in Arkansas is on that list. And more than $800,000 will be awarded to 14 rural hospitals in southern Arkansas to help in the sharing of patient information. Curtis Barnett, the president and CEO of Arkansas Blue Cross and Blue Shield, which is providing the one-year grant, says it will enable the hospitals to connect to the State Health Alliance for Records Exchange, which he says can provide life-saving data.
You have to know if somebody's not utilizing their primary care physician and getting their visits taken care of. You have to know if somebody is a diabetic patient, but they're not having their exams or they're not having their medication filled. And that's where we see this partnership today and SHARE being able to fill that gap, provide these providers with the information that they need to help keep people healthy.
The program allows healthcare providers to communicate electronically even if they're on different systems. The Arkansas Department of Health says that will allow physicians to have a more complete picture of a patient's history and reduce unnecessary testing.
This is Reflections in Black, and I'm your host, Raven Cook. Reflections in Black is a segment dedicated to exploring the legacy of Black Americans in the United States and around the globe. Reflections in Black also provides resources for understanding and hope for all people. Coretta Scott was born on April 27, 1927 in Marion, Alabama. As a child, she spent her early years on a farm owned by her parents, Obie Leonard and Bernice McMurray Scott. In the early 1940s, Coretta Scott's father's trucking business became extremely successful, leading to harassment from local whites. In 1942, a fire was set to the Scott family home, and many suspected white resentment may have been the motivation. Despite the challenges, the family focused on encouraging their children to work hard and receive the highest levels of education. This idea a young Coretta Scott took to heart as she graduated from Lincoln High School and then attended Antioch College in Ohio, where she received a Bachelor's of Arts in Music and Elementary Education. In 1948, the accomplished vocalist and musician Coretta Scott held her concert debut performing at Second Baptist Church. With a grant from Jesse Smith Noyes Foundation, Coretta Scott enrolled at Boston New England's Conservatory of Music in 1951. While earning a bachelor's in voice and violin, a young Coretta Scott also began dating Martin Luther King Jr., a doctoral candidate at Boston University School of Theology. Despite the objection from his parents, who wanted Martin to marry a woman from his local hometown of Atlanta, Martin and Coretta Scott were married on June 18, 1953. In the mid-1950s, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and Coretta Scott King moved to Montgomery, Alabama, where Dr. King became pastor of Dexter Avenue Baptist Church. Mrs. Coretta Scott King spent most of her early life out of public view, raising their four children. Despite not being in the public, this did not stop the work of Mrs. King in the civil rights movement. She accompanied her husband in 1957 on a trip to Ghana to mark the country's independence, and in 1959, she accompanied Dr. King once again to India, where she led spirituals before her husband spoke to large audiences. In 1960, the family moved to Atlanta, and Mrs. King worked to gain her husband's release from a Georgia prison with the help of presidential candidate, soon to be president, John F. Kennedy. Coretta Scott King would use the 1960s to work in both education as a music teacher at Morris Brown College and in the movement for human rights, as she served as a delegate for the Women's Strike for Peace to the 17-Nation Disarmament Conference in Switzerland in 1962. She would accompany her husband as he would win the Nobel Peace Prize in 1964, and throughout the civil rights movement, she would work in the arts, hosting freedom concerts and poetry readings. In 1965, shortly before his assassination, Coretta Scott King met with Minister Malcolm X, while Dr. King was in jail after a voting rights demonstration in Selma, Alabama. The following year, Coretta Scott King would continue her work in anti-war movements and took a public stand against Vietnam before Dr. King. After Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s assassination in 1968, Coretta Scott King would continue her life teaching others on the philosophy of nonviolence, and in 1969, she published an autobiography titled My Life with Martin Luther King Jr. Throughout the latter half of the 20th century, Mrs. Coretta Scott King dedicated her life to building the Martin Luther King Center for Nonviolent Social Change, later known as the King Center. She would also lend her voice to several human rights campaigns and committed herself to working to the abolishing of the apartheid system. To further speak out against South African apartheid, Mrs. Coretta Scott King would meet with President Ronald Reagan in an effort to urge him to put economic sanctions on South Africa. Mrs. King's work continued as she fought and successfully created the National Martin Luther King Jr. Holiday in 1986. Throughout her life, she committed herself to nonviolence, women's rights, and human rights. Sadly, on January 30th, 2006, she would pass away. Mrs. King's life is a reminder that service to all people is a lifelong commitment, and we celebrate her life and legacy today on Reflections in Black.
Reflections in Black is a production of KUAF Public Radio, 91.3 FM in Fayetteville. You can hear weekly segments of the program on Ozarks at Large, or you can hear past editions at KUAF.com. Just search Reflections in Black.
And ahead today on 91.3, the impeachment trial in the United States Senate continues. Yesterday, the president's lawyers finished their defense as the pressure to include witnesses grows. The president's defense team says nothing in John Bolton's revelations, even if true, would rise to the level of abuse of power or impeachable offense. Special coverage begins at noon on KUAF as questioning begins in the Senate. We'll have all of the proceedings today and likely into tonight until the session has concluded.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Sona, the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas, continues the 65th season February 1st at Walton Arts Center. Sona musicians and special guest soloists perform the season's second Masterworks concert featuring Carl Orff's masterpiece, Carmina Burana. Tickets at 443-5600 or sonamusic.org.
This is Ozarks at Large, and I am in the Harold and Blanchcock News Studio. That's where Timothy Dennis works and produces. I come over here every Wednesday, Timothy, to talk to you about upcoming live music.
Let's start with tonight, actually. Mm-hmm. Willie Carlisle's back in town.
Well, you say you'll die for Dixie. Brother, I'll take you at your word. The only risk in stars and bars is getting flipped the burden. But we're throwing bricks through windows, man. Let it all unfurl. It takes a certain kind of fool to make a difference in the world. It takes a certain kind of fool.
He is all over the place.
He is one of the hardest working musicians, folk singers, writers that I know.
All right, so you got a chance to see him tonight.
Tonight, and there's one later in the weekend, but we'll talk about that in a few minutes. Tonight, he's going to be at the Dixon Street Pub in Fayetteville. That show tonight gets underway at about 7:30. Again, that's at the Dixon Street Pub in Fayetteville.
Very good.
Moving on to tomorrow night, Thursday night, the Lark and the Loon are going to be in Rogers. They're a fantastic duo, plays kind of old-timey folk music.
Yeah.
Well, I can point all my fingers, I can point all my toes. The only one to blame, I suppose, is silly and oh so stubborn me.
Oh, I know sometimes I can make you a difference.
They're going to be at Natural State Beer Company in Rogers. Should get underway at about 6 o'clock. Again, that's tomorrow night in Rogers.
All right.
Moving on to Friday night. Hostie is going to be back in Fayetteville.
Smoke and Barrel, I think, right?
Smoke and Barrel Tavern. If you don't know who Hostie is, wrote the Oklahoma Breakdown, Washing the Dishes.
Well, it's Friday and we're getting tore up. Down to the river in the back of Fred's truck. Remember I asked you, you said it was all right. Go get juiced down by the river bed tonight. So it's late.
That show gets underway at 10 o'clock Friday night at the Smoke and Barrel Tavern. It does not have a cover.
Well, you can't beat that.
No. Happening up in Springdale Friday night, Jasper Logan is going to have a show at Paradin Supply Company.
You live and you die. Life is all about energy. And when you gone, where it's gonna reside? I remember when my daddy tried to tell me about my granny. Said that she didn't die, but God finally made her happy. I couldn't comprehend it, didn't want to get too sappy, cause that feeling was worse.
There's a $10 cover for that show. Gets underway at about 8 o'clock. Again, that's at Paradin Supply Company in Springdale Friday night. Hmm. Emily Rowland is going to be at Growler USA in Rogers.
And Emily's got a fantastic voice.
Yeah. That set at Growler USA gets underway at about 8 o'clock Friday night. Again, that's in Rogers. Happening over in Eureka Springs Friday night, Jekyll and Hyde will be on stage at Chelsea's.
I try not to laugh anytime you say Jekyll and Hyde, but it makes me laugh.
It makes me laugh, too. I think it's a clever name.
It is a clever name.
Especially when you consider that it's the dynamic duo of Marty Payton and Jeff Kearney.
Who I like very much.
I do as well.
That's at Chelsea's?
That's at Chelsea's in Eureka Springs Friday night. She's going to arrive about 9:30.
I met some folks from Chelsea's last Thursday when Lee, Sherry, and I from KUAF were up there for the Cocktails for a Cause.
Good.
Yeah.
More music in Eureka Springs Friday night. Brian Martin's going to be at the Gravel Bar.
Ain't nothing like that Sunday evening, sitting around the house with nothing to do. Ain't nothing like that crazy feeling I get when I'm alone with you.
That solo set at the Gravel Bar Friday night should get our way at about 7 o'clock. Again, that's in Eureka Springs. Moving on to Saturday night, Smoke and Barrel Tavern is going to have a band by the name of Luna J. They are an alternative funk pop group from Springfield.
Springfield, Missouri.
Yes. Right. Not Illinois or Massachusetts.
Right. I got everything you want. I got everything you need. Do you want me on my back or do you want me on my knees? These are just the basic facts. I have you, beg you, baby.
That set gets underway at 10 o'clock Saturday night. Again, that's at the Smoke and Barrel Tavern in Fayetteville. Happening earlier in the day, Saturday in Fayetteville, is the annual Frost Fest.
Oh, right. Fossil Cove.
Yeah,
right?
It's happening up near the Washington County Fairgrounds. Mm-hmm. In addition to beer and food, musical performances will be featured by Monk is King, String Deft, which features members of Arkansas, the Vine Brothers, and Opal Agafia and the Sweet Nothings.
Oh, that'll be fun.
And then Jamie Lou and the Hullabaloo.
That'll be a lot of fun.
Tickets for the whole shebang are $60 for general admission. Everything gets underway at about 2 o'clock Saturday afternoon. Again, that's next to the Washington County Fairgrounds in Fayetteville.
All right.
More music Saturday. Nomad Southtown is going to have kind of a shoegaze dream rock show with Guitar Jar, Olympics, and Moonsong.
Okay.
Cover for that show is about $5. Should get our way at about 8 o'clock Saturday night. Again, that's at Nomad's off of 15th Street in Fayetteville.
So Nomad South.
Yes.
Right.
And happening over in Eureka Springs Saturday night, the Creek Rocks will be at Chelsea's.
The Creek Rocks. Creek Rocks.
Mark Bilyeu,
Cindy Wolf. Yes, yes, right.
They're just a fantastic folk band from Southern Missouri.
Right.
Come on, Missouri girl.
Gets underway at about 9:30 Saturday night. Again, that's at Chelsea's in Eureka Springs. Then down in Fort Smith, Earl and them will be on stage at Harry's Downtown.
Weatherman's calling for 6-day rain. Another flash flood in a hurricane. Sunshine, clear sky all around you. But you just can't.
As a $7 cover, gets underway at about 8 o'clock Saturday night. Again, that's at Harry's in downtown Fort Smith. Moving on to Sunday, if you're not into the whole big game thing.
It's the Kansas City Chiefs. We've been waiting 50 years for this.
I know, okay. I know, but all I'm right. just saying, if you're not one of those people who okay. like to watch a pigskin,
sure.
here are a few opportunities. Fayetteville Public Library is going to have the next Mountain Street Stage Series concert featuring Mighty Fine Time.
Well, so you could do that and still see
true.
Kickoff.
True, true, true.
Because that's
true,
not until that's at 2, and kickoff's not until after 5.
Correct.
All right.
If you don't know who Mighty Fine Time is, it's a group that features Dennis Collins, Denise Lanuti, Jennifer Parker, and Bayer Blaine.
They're a lot of fun.
They are a heck of a lot of fun. Their music ranges from blues, bluegrass, and folk to jazz standards and originals. That show is at Fayetteville Public Library, so that means it's free, and right. it starts at about 2 o'clock.
Right.
So you're right. There is time
you can
to
see
catch that.
That.
And then, yes.
Yes. And look, if you don't want to watch the game, that's fine. I'm not saying anything. It's just that it's the Chiefs, and they haven't been
right.
there for 50 years. I don't
right.
know if I mentioned that. Okay.
Another show that's happening earlier in the day up in Rogers, Dominic B. Roy will be at Java Dudes.
Okay.
And actually, FYI, Dominic B. Roy is scheduled to come into our studio in the near future.
Fantastic.
So stick around for that. That show, again, Sunday, is at noon at Java Dudes Coffee House in Rogers. And then skipping ahead to Tuesday, Mike Zito's Big Blues Band will be at George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville. He is a blues rock artist. His latest album is a tribute to Chuck Berry.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right.
Tickets for that show are $15 advance, go up to $20 on Tuesday. Should get our way at about 9 o'clock Tuesday night at George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville.
All right. Beat the 49ers. Timothy, thank you very much.
Thank you, Kyle.
This is Ozarks at Large. Fred Hirsch is a remarkable musician. He's been nominated for 8 Grammy Awards, including this year for Best Instrumental Composition. He was honored with a 2003 Guggenheim Memorial Fellowship for Composition and a 2016 Doris Duke Performing Artist Award. He was playing classical music on the piano by age 4, composing by the time he was 10, and became interested in jazz when he was in college. Eventually, he graduated with honors from the New England Conservatory. He began recording in 1980 and recording as a band leader in 84. His life away from music, also something. He was diagnosed with HIV when he was 30 and is a vocal proponent for AIDS research and gay rights, donating time, concerts, and energy. In 2008, he developed an HIV-induced dementia, which left him in a coma for 2 months. He recovered and underwent extensive rehabilitation to regain the ability to play the piano. Friday night, he takes the Walton Arts Center stage with the Fred Hirsch Trio. Recently, Robert Ginsberg, the host of Shades of Jazz on KUAF each Friday night, talked with Fred Hirsch.
Your first excursions into music, as I understand it, was when you were quite young, and I gathered they included a sort of innate attraction towards the piano, and you had a piano in your house. Can you tell me a little bit about your memories of playing piano as a child?
Yeah, it was there and I went to it. Wasn't anything that anybody pushed me to do. And so when my parents got married, they got a baby grand piano for the living room because that's sort of what people did back then. You know, every home had to have a piano. And I just went up to it and started picking out tunes, themes from cartoon shows, bits of records that I had on my kiddie record player. I started lessons very young, 4 or 5. You know, played primarily classical music up till about the age of 12 or so. But I was very interested in improvising. Even though the improvisation sounded like classical music, so I would improvise in the style of different classical composers. And starting around 3rd grade to around 6th or 7th grade, I had private theory and composition lessons, and I did a lot of the kind of things that freshmen at conservatories do. Everything from 4-part writing and counterpoint, score analysis, harmony, and composing in different styles. So that toolkit really is the only composition study I've really ever had. I mean, I've picked up a lot of stuff over the years from people, and I've tried a lot of things and learned from experience. But that was the basic toolkit that when I started to play jazz as a 18-year-old, that was the backbone of understanding, you know, harmony and chords and how that worked. And the main challenge as I started out as a jazz pianist in Cincinnati, Ohio, was, you know, to get my sense of rhythm together. That was the big difference between jazz and classical music is the rhythm.
Your desire from a very young age to not only mimic some things you heard that caught your ear, but also to improvise, that really is the grounding for composing, wouldn't you say? I'm kind of, I guess, reaching for that connection.
Well, if you look at jazz music as spontaneous composition, you would think, well, anybody who can play jazz should be able to compose well, but it's really not, it doesn't always follow. And, you know, it took me, I was well into my professional career, 23, 4 years old, playing with a lot of heavyweights in New York before I started to write my own tunes, because I thought, wow, you know, how am I going to write anything better than Wayne Shorter or Billy Strayhorn or Monk or Ornette Coleman or, you know, like, why bother? I'm really glad that I immersed myself in a canon, and I'm glad that I came through learning how to play jazz or from the oral tradition, from the older players, hanging out on the scene, learning tunes, being on the bandstand with no sheet music, just having to kind of know the stuff, having it transmitted in sometimes a tough love kind of way, but just sort of learning by doing.
We reach a certain age, and I think we look back to realize that we've created a history. In your case, that includes over 36 recordings as a leader and co-leader and a remarkable performance career. And I know there have been occasions in your life where it appeared your history might be cut short. I'm just wondering how your close encounters with mortality inform your perception of the future and perhaps your reflections of the past.
That's a big question. I mean, I've certainly had a lot of health challenges, including coming back from a 2-month coma about 11 years ago. Certainly that affects you, not just mentally, but physically. A couple of years ago, I put out a memoir, Good Things Happen Slowly, in which I detail my struggles with my health, my identity, and also some of the what you might call triumphs of my career. I'll be 65 in October, and A, I'm lucky to be here. So there's certainly that. I never expected to be signing up for Medicare. Also thinking, well, you know, maybe I've got another 15 good years of this. What's the next act? You know, where is it going to go? And also realizing that I'm at a certain age and stature where inevitably I'm going to have to get out of the way of some of the players that are coming behind me. And that's as it should be. But I'm also getting to the stage of perhaps being looked at as some sort of a minor master at all this. So, you know, maybe if I keep going here, that reputation will solidify. We're at a tough time for acoustic jazz in our culture. I think that's just a product of the collapse of the record business and just the way music is being consumed right now, you know, we really depend on performing arts centers to anchor our touring possibilities. I do think that there's a value for everybody, and particularly for young people, to be able to go out and, as I said, put your phone down and just trust the artist to give you some kind of experience for an hour or an hour and 15 minutes. To learn how to listen deeply.
For your first performance in Northwest Arkansas at Walton Arts Center on January 31st, you'll be performing with your trio, and this is a long-standing trio, John Hebert on bass and Eric McPherson on the drums. Tell me about the dynamics of working with a group for a long time. I imagine that there are great advantages to this familiarity musically, but I also wonder if there's challenges with having too much familiarity.
I've been playing with John Hebert and Eric McPherson for more than 10 years now. We still try to challenge each other and, never try to phone it in. You know, and as long as the situation is good and the instruments are good and sound is good, then we pretty much trust that some cool things will happen that haven't happened before. I mean, you can get a little too comfortable sometimes in the way that you approach a piece. And the challenge is to, sometimes verbally communicate to another musician without telling them how to play or what to play or not play. You can say, hey, I think we're getting a little predictable here. Is there something else we can try, or is there something else I can do to make this more interesting? It's a challenging thing, verbal communication, like in any relationship. You don't want to be controlling or directive, but, it also you want to keep the channels open so that it can continue to grow. But it is nice to have the feeling that we're going to give a really good performance because there's just, the experiences that we've had together are really going to show.
Fred Hirsch will be at the Walton Arts Center Star Theater Friday night beginning at 7:30. He talked with Robert Ginsberg, host of KUAF's Shades of Jazz, heard every Friday night at 10. You can find out more about the concert at waltonartscenter.org.
Walton Arts Center's 10x10 Art Series presents Ballet Memphis Contemporary Times 3, February 6th at 7 p.m. Inspired by Memphis's musical and literary heritage, the performance will include three original works by contemporary choreographers. WaltonArtsCenter.org or 443-5600 for tickets.
This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Tawnytown. 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Contributors today included Zuzanna Sitek, Jacqueline Froelich, who also delivered information about the coronavirus, and Timothy Dennis. Timothy also mastered our show in the Harold and Blanchcock News Studio. Our thanks to Robert Ginsberg for his help today. Additional content for this edition of Ozarks provided by our colleagues at KUAR Public Radio for Little Rock and Central Arkansas. Reflections in Black, written and hosted by Raven Cook, the founder and president of Foundations, Black History Education Programming. Reflections in Black, produced by Timothy. Antoinette Grajeda helps us end many of our shows by finding songs recorded just for Ozarks at Large. She finds them in our archives. Today, she selected Jamie Lou and the Hullabaloo performing The High Road. The band scheduled to play at Frostfest Saturday. More about the band at jamielouandthehullabaloo.com. More about Frostfest at FossilCoveBrewing.com. We're back with you tomorrow.
Say.